Thanks so much for joining us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, turning our attention to one person's life. Well, really, there were many people involved in this book. It's titled Out of Rubicon, A Grandfather's Notes on His Life. George Raymer, he was a farmer, he was a world traveler, he was worked in the Peace Corps, he worked as a volunteer in Kenya, he was a U.S. aid worker in Afghanistan, and the author of this book, Out from Rubicon, A Grandfather's Notes on His Life. And as we talk with George today, and by the way, it's a fascinating story, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Maybe questions about his life or experiences, or maybe comments on your own life and your own experiences. I'd love to hear from you. George Raymer, welcome. Thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it very much. And you've written a fascinating story.
Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate the compliment.
Your life story, why did you decide to write this?
I wrote this because my wife and I became grandparents, and something we never thought would happen. And the little sweetheart has just turned 2 years old. And I was thinking, well, what are the chances I'm going to see her graduate from high school? I may not. So I wanted her to know a little bit about her grandpa and what his life was like, and maybe give her some grandfatherly advice along the way.
Did you think at the start of your, when you became, went to college and so forth, did you think all these things were going to happen to you over your life?
I had no idea. I thought I might end up on the farm in Rubicon, farming the rest of my life, which I did for 30 years. But the chance came up, and I can't say enough about some of the people, especially some of the professors I met here at UW when I was a student. And especially David Wickert. Some people may know who that is, but he inspired us to do international work. And then the Peace Corps came along, and they had a program where they wanted to recruit Wisconsin farm boys. And here I am. And the other incentive, as I write about, was they offered a 5-credit class the spring semester, senior year, and it was... Rumor was there would be a guaranteed A if you showed up and participated a little bit. So welcome to the Peace Corps. I was happy to go.
Well, Dave Wickert told me once, he said, Larry, you're a terrible judge of cattle. When I was dairy cattle judging in a class, he says, but you give such good reasons, you almost make me think that I was wrong and you're right.
And that was one of the purposes of the dairy cattle judging class, was you learned how to make decisions and stand by them. And those are the life lessons that you learn in school. You don't think about it much, but when you get out and all of a sudden, when in Afghanistan, I was in a room with about 30 Afghans and maybe 15 or 16 American soldiers with their weapons and, loaded and ready to take on any emergency. And somebody turned to me and said, well, what is America's position on that? And, oh, my gosh, I'm speaking for the American people, and I'm just from Rubicon, but...
And Rubicon, by the way, is the township of Rubicon, that's in southeast Dodge County.
Yeah, it's by classification, it's south central Wisconsin. But yeah, it's we're about 70 miles from Milwaukee, about 70 miles, 30 miles from Milwaukee, 70 miles from Madison. So yeah, we're right down in the southeast corner there. And because of where we lived, I went to Hartford High School. And had some very good guidance and teachers there as well.
But yeah.
As I say in the book, sometimes I had to pinch myself. I say, this is a long way from a one-room schoolhouse with Mrs. Luck and, 16 other students in 8 grades.
Yeah, well, I was in the same. I was in Hope School with Mrs. Dahl, and it was one room and when I started and all eighth grade. So we have some things in common.
Yeah,
here.
We do.
Georgia and probably, and from the sound of it, both of us wound up and hardly would never expect where
never,
we
would. Never would have thought this would have happened. But I always had the philosophy in life, if you get a chance to do something, you should take the chance, even though several times I ended up, it was kind of like being a deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
But we humans are remarkably adaptable. That's one thing I learned in life. And it's amazing what we can do when we put our minds to it.
Yeah. Peace Corps, you tell it really interesting. You were in Kenya. And spent three and a half years
in Kenya, East Africa. Had to learn the Swahili language. We had high-intensity language training where there were students that would yell at us for 9 hours a day, and we had to yell back. No papers, no pencils. And I had nightmares in Swahili, but it took me about a year to learn it. I say this as a proud Wisconsinite. My first complete sentence in Swahili was Nina taka pombe moja baridi sana, which means I want one cold beer.
Okay. You learned that one well. Okay, and you met a great guy that became a great friend, Otto.
Otto, who's also a graduate of this university, has a PhD from here and was an extension agent up north at the Spooner Agriculture Research Station. But he's traveled almost 100 countries. But he and I have two very odd people to be thrown together in Kenya, but we managed to get along, and we've been fast friends ever since then.
And there was a guy, Jackson, that you...
Jackson was our cook, and he became more like a brother to both of us. He cooked wonderfully. He made Thanksgiving turkeys as good as my grandmother, one on a wood stove and one on a gas stove. And he taught us Swahili words little by little. Never spoke English, although we knew he could speak it. The only English words I ever heard him say was he had a package and he read it to us, and it said, soft brown sugar. That's the only English he ever spoke to me.
So what did you learn while living and working in Kenya?
I learned that people are people, farmers are farmers, and that if you ask the right questions and if you can learn the language, I mentioned in the book how when we had engagements with farmers, we would typically speak in three languages. We would use tribal greetings, which you could tell by people's last names. And, you know, like here you can tell if somebody is German or Italian or Spanish. But we could try to tell the tribal group. So we'd always use a tribal greeting. Like for Kikuyu, we would say Nyati Aleo. For Luyas, we would say Mulembe Vulai, which takes a little bit of practice. And then we would have our conversation in Swahili, but technical terms we would say in English because there weren't Swahili words for them. Both Otto and I, when we visited farmers, we had African counterparts with us, and part of our mission was to teach them some of the technical knowledge that we had. Although, to be honest, I think I learned more than I taught, but that was the idea.
And you got married while you were there. Your wife you'd met before here in the States.
She and I met in an agriculture journalism class, believe it or not. And then, I don't know, you know, how boys and girls can be. It was during our spring semester of senior year. And then she actually worked in Ag Hall for a while for a former ag journalism professor named Fritz Elbert. Mm-hmm. He did documentary films and she wrote scripts. And so then in the summer of 70, was it, we burned up the bellies of a couple of big airplanes with hot letters back and forth. And eventually she came over and we got married by a Baptist preacher who fixed Volkswagens to support his ministry and had a ceremony in the garden at the house we were living at.
Oh, man. Fritz Albert was a colleague of mine, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
So there you go. Lots of ties between your family and mine. Well, you decided, I think you took 3 years, 3.5 years.
Yes.
And decided to come back to the States, and you wound up eventually on the farm.
Yes, came back and didn't know what to do, and we had to make a readjustment to American life. Everything was so
hard,
fast.
Wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Everything was so fast, and everybody was so materialistic, especially our relatives, but God bless our relatives. And, you know, it's a competition in some regards. So I had a chance to teach agriculture at Hartford High School, taught for 5 years. And then I transitioned from teaching to farming. If we were going to do something, we had to do it fairly quick because my parents were aging. So we formed a partnership with my mom and dad, the Raymer family farm. She and I were the fourth generation to operate the farm. Our children are the fifth that picked stones and did all the, you know, shoveled manure, did all the good stuff. Eventually now we have it in a trust, and our son is going to take it over and manage it pretty much. But his sisters will have input. And the one sister wants to be organic, and my son wants to be traditional. And I let them worry about that when the time comes.
Oh, man. Well, there were some monumental events on that, but the fire, you wound up having to rebuild their barn. You made that very state of the art. But then you were injured.
Yeah, farming is a dangerous activity. I write about the day the bull almost killed me, and every farmer has a story like that from my era anyway. But I was helping a cow have a calf, and sometimes the calves don't come out 2 feet in the nose like they're supposed to. And so I had my arm up to my armpit in the cow trying to get the leg straightened out. We were both standing up, which is not unusual for a cow, but then she decided to lay down all of a sudden.
Suddenly.
Well, with me inside, and oh my goodness, things hurt like heck. And of course, trying to be a tough guy, I didn't look after it until my wife finally said, "You go see a doctor." And when I saw the doctor, he said, "You're on my surgical schedule the first opportunity." When I came out of surgery, he gave me a finger-wagging lecture. "You screw up your arm again like that, and I won't be able to fix it. You'll lose the use of your arm for the rest of your life." Well, then that kind of says maybe that's a message from somewhere by somebody that it's time to do something different.
And it was interesting how you wound up with a USAID project in Afghanistan. Talk about that again, how that happened.
Well, I had been recruited by the Peace Corps, by USAID, when I came out, because the Peace Corps volunteers were USAID's genetic base, if you want to put it that way. And if all the USAID people I met in Afghanistan, probably 80% of them had a Peace Corps background. So I had a combination of the Peace Corps background, and I mentioned in the book there was four major qualifications. You had to have 3 to 5 years international development experience. Had that in Kenya. You had to have fluency in a foreign language. Well, I speak Swahili. You had to have an advanced degree in a relevant field of study, and I came back a couple summers and got a degree in agriculture education.
And then, get that earlier job, yeah. Then what was the last?
The last one was that you had to have top secret security clearance from the U.S. military. When I got done filling out that form and printed it out, it was 56 pages. And I thought, oh, well, at least I tried. And to my absolute amazement, I got a call some weeks later, not very long later, and the guy said, "Well, Mr. Raymer, we'd like to interview." So we sat down, and I interviewed with three people from D.C. All of a sudden, I got a call a week later. The guy said, "Mr. Raymer, we'd like you to work for us." And I could not believe that was happening. And then I said, "Well, when is this going to happen?" And this was in the middle of November. And I'm thinking, well, January, February. And I said, well, when do you want me to start working? He said, how about Sunday? And I said, what? Yeah, total shock. And this was all because the President Obama and the administration were trying to get so X number, I think it was 300 civilian boots on the ground by January 1st of 2010. So I went to training in D.C. at the George Shultz School of Diplomatic Training. And then we went to a place in Indiana, I think Muscatatuck, and we got military training. We went in Humvees, and they turned us upside down, so we knew what it was like if we got hit by an IED and got flipped over. We had weapons training, and the craziest thing was we had defensive driving. And the first sentence the guy said when we went, he says, I'm going to unlearn everything you learned about good driving. And the final test was we had to drive a car, and we had to slam into two cars that were parked nose to nose and break them apart. And then we had to do the same thing backwards. Mm. And, well, that was kind of fun, but it was exciting.
It was dangerous work. But and your role was
oh, I was called,
in the agriculture.
Well, area. I was a development officer. And I got lectured a couple times. You're some steps above the Peace Corps. Now, your job is not to get out and do the extension work. Your job is to supervise people who do the extension work. Basically, I looked after several projects. The first year, it was American taxpayer-funded projects worth about $12 million. And then I ended up in the embassy, and I worked for something called the Office of Agriculture, and the OAG's budget was $1 billion with a B dollars, and I got to have input on that, and I met with people who were managing the programs. The USAID at the time had implementing partners, so I had to talk with the implementing partners. I got out a lot thanks to the wonderful soldiers that protected me to see projects. I got to sit down on the ground and talk with Afghan farmers. That, Larry, was probably the neatest thing of the whole thing, because farmers are farmers wherever you go. And the advantage I had being a Wisconsin farm boy is I knew the questions to ask. And we had to go through an interpreter, but the questions were, I guess the word you would use is resonated with the farmers. They knew where I was coming from. And I don't know, maybe there was a sense, but wherever I've had the chance to go in the world, I've gotten along really good with fellow farmers.
Yeah, I can see why. Having grown up on a farm myself, a dairy farmer, I can see why. And it was dangerous. I mean, you know, people died.
Yeah, I had a roommate who was killed by an Afghan policeman carrying a bomb, blew up right next to him. We had several. I mentioned the book. One of the ones that made the hair stand up in the back of my neck was, I was out in the middle of a field with a soldier looking at a crop, and some irrigation. And all of a sudden, the guy says, "Get behind me, sir. I think a sniper has got his sights on us." Well, he didn't have to tell me twice, let me tell you. And then there was the worst, the most dangerous was there was a truck with a bomb in it, a suicide vehicular-borne improvised explosive device that blew up about 40 feet ahead of us, and a big black cloud of smoke came over the truck, and then a fireball. And the training that they gave us kicked in. I didn't even think about it. And the first thing we did was we pulled the gunner down because he was up. And I thought he was going to get his face burned off, but he was facing backwards. And so the fire went over him.
What are your, here we're almost out of time already. My goodness, time's going by here. How did you feel about your experience in the end? Do you feel that you helped?
I think I can honestly say I helped. Number one, we showed people what real Americans are like. I'd like to think I'm a real American, although don't ask my wife. Secondly, information we shared, the things we could do agriculturally were size neutral, artificial insemination, improved varieties of seeds, simple management. Planting corn in straight rows was something that we, they teased me about the being the guy, the corn in straight rows guy in Afghanistan. But I learned so much also and found out that people are really, really nice. There's, you know, there's so many good people in the world, and it gives me faith in humanity. And despite all our problems, where we are going should be a good place.
Yeah. And here we are now. AID is gone. And this is not in your book, but I just wonder what your feelings are relating to.
Well, I think it's an opportunity lost, an opportunity missed, and there are many people who are going to be adversely affected by the absence of AID, my opinion.
Yeah.
And it was not that much. It was like 1% of the entire budget of the United States. So good investment for the results.
And also Peace Corps.
Yes. Well, aren't I fortunate, and the people who were in the Peace Corps, aren't we fortunate to have had that experience? I often said to my friend Otto, I'm just amazed that those people, the good people we worked with, even listened to us, because, you know, we were just out of college, very young, very green, didn't know the language, but thankfully to our farm backgrounds, we had the ability to portray or to advance some very good advice. And being in Kenya for 3.5 years, as you probably have heard or said, extension takes about 3 years for an idea to take hold. And what Otto and I did with pastures and improved grazing, you know, doubled farmers' milk production, and that's a great reward.
And what do you hope your grandchild's going to get out of this? And everybody else, or anybody else?
I hope, number one is that never be ashamed of where you come from, no matter how humble it is. Number two, we all have within us the ability to do good in the world. And number three, if you ever have the chance to assist those who are less fortunate than you, do so.
Well, we've just kind of scratched the surface of what you have written and what you've experienced, George, in your book. I thank you so much for writing it. I learned a lot. There's a lot in here that overlaps with things that I've done in my life, and I really appreciated your work in putting this together. Just scratched the surface, so I hope others have a chance to read your book. It's titled, again, Out of Rubicon, A Grandfather's Notes on His Life. And our guest, George Henry Raymer, it's been a pleasure. Thank you,
Larry. It's been a pleasure to be here.
It really flew by. Coming up, we are going to take a look at some new guidelines on alcohol that's come out of the Department of Health and Human Services and some of the problems that may develop, perhaps as a result of the changes. That next, I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.